think it's gonna be a hell of a night. A hell of a night. So we can do whatever you like. Hey, hey. It took me all day to find some inspiration. It just hit me like a ton of bricks, no renovation. Problem with the game, nah, it ain't no innovation. I see my shit all in your shit, we call that imitation. And they say that's flattering, but I ain't flattered at all. Matter of fact, y'all need to practice that more. See my man Nate ask me if I gain weight. I said no, my pockets got fatter, that's all. Money was an issue, but now that that's solved, I ball.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Tiara Tuesdays. It is your host and your favorite scholar, Tiara, and I'm so excited to have you all back listening today. Today, we are going to talk about the prison experience, and although there are so many ways in which I can discuss the prison experience, I'm going to talk about two instances, in particular, the Attica riot and the Stanford prison experiment, both of which took place in 1971. I'm also going to share my recent experience I had with going to jail for the first time. But before I get into that, I do have a lot of questions, controversial questions that have arose from the Roe versus Wade podcast. If you guys have not listened to that, make sure you go back and check that out. So we're going to get into these questions. As a Black woman, I feel like Roe versus Wade being overturned was pretty devastating for me because we as Black women experience different medical care than other races. You talked about this in previous episodes, but I'm curious on your perspective from that viewpoint since you are a Black woman. So I definitely agree that the overturn of Roe versus Wade was definitely devastating. And, you know, for all of those, like, you know, non-minorities out there, yes, it is true. Black women, we do experience a different level of care than other races. And let me tell you when this was became privy to me is when I was pregnant, I was in therapy. My former therapist, I was complaining to her, you know, multiple times in session. And she finally told me, like, you know, and she's a psychologist, when we psychologists, doctors, when we see Medi-Cal as the form of payment, she's like, and I don't do this, but I know a lot of people that do this, you know, now I'm not sure. But she says that a lot of people, doctors and psychologists being the people, they give a different level of treatment than if you had PPO, like private insurance versus if you have medical insurance. Now factor in the fact that you have Medicaid and you are a minority. You really not receiving quality care, which is why I found my midwife at like month 7, because I was just ultimately just disheartened with the care that I was receiving in Nevada. So I definitely agree that this is a devastating situation, especially because I feel like the politicians that, you know, put this in place, this overturn, they're really missing the fact that although, you know, everybody has sex, not everybody wants to be parents. And so that's my perspective on that. Next question is, I don't feel like anyone should be able to decide my fate. Why are politicians involving themselves in genealogical care? Okay, so I was just saying, yes, why are these politicians getting involved? This is what we are not doing, though, as a society. We're not doing these in our own cities, in our own states. We need to elect better state legislators. Our states, whatever state you live on, it depends upon that. Who is in office in your state, because they are controlling what is going on. I mean, it's voting time. Go get out there and vote. That's what's going on, is that's why they're able to get involved, because not enough people are voting or standing up for their rights. Someone else asked, what about my religious beliefs? So, you know, religion and abortions. Now, I do believe in God, as you guys know, and I do know that God believes that every child is a blessing and he does not believe in abortions. It goes against God's belief. However, God does know my heart. So, I mean, you know, what about your religious beliefs? I feel like that's kind of a question for you. You kind of have to examine that, like, for your own self. What if I'm a teenager and my state doesn't offer abortions? What am I supposed to do? My mother would kill me. Whew. So I'm guessing this is a pregnant teenager that put this hypothetical situation out there. That is rough. That is rough because I know a lot of mothers, like, that have teenage daughters would, like, kick their child out if they got pregnant, you know, as a teen. Or would force them to get an abortion. What if the child, even the, 'cause 16, honey, you're a child. And she didn't say her age, but I'm just throwing that out. The 16 is when I lost my virginity, but I'm not sure. This generation, it moves quicker. But just assuming, you know, like, no judgment, 15, 16, 17, however old you are, being a teen mom is really rough because just, you know, let me just give you, just drop you some tea real quick. Our minds do not fully develop until age 25. So if you are a teenager and you're pregnant or, you know, you're debating what your options are, I'm just saying that having a child as a teen, you grow up quicker than you need to. And you miss out on a lot. And I know some trifling ass mothers who had children at 17 and now, you know, act like that they don't have kids and be out here trying to act like that they're in their 20s. Honey, you're over 30 and you got these kids. Yeah, you had your first kid at 17. But now this bitch feels like she can just, you know, oh, my kids are grown. Honey, your oldest child is 13. That is not grown. So you got to take that into consideration. If you have a child right now, what you're going to miss out on. And then when you get older, you may try to, like, get time back, and you can't get that time back. So really weigh that into consideration. Think about your support system. You know, you say your mother would kill you. Well, what about, is your father in the picture, grandmother, aunts, uncles? We really got to weigh our options here. This Roe versus Wade, it calls a lot into perspective. It is. Okay, last question. What about incest? There are high cases of dads raping their own daughters and even their sons. Have you ever heard of the Mendoza brothers? I have heard of the Mendoza brothers. Yes, this is trifling. And this is trifling. Incest is just all the way trifling for me. I mean, and, you know, to rape your own daughter, your own son, there's a special place in hell for these kind of people. Like, literally a special place in hell for them. And, you know, I would hope that your fucking father wouldn't want you to have his child, like, because that would be his son, daughter, granddaughter, grandson. Like, you just, so yes, incest, we need to factor that in. The Mendoza brothers, for all you guys who don't know, these two were minority boys and they grew up very wealthy and their father was very wealthy and powerful. However, he was raping both of these boys orally in the butt. He was making them swallow, you know, and the mother was privy to this and did nothing. And ultimately, these two boys killed these parents and they got life in jail because the system, as we're going to talk about here in a minute, is very unjust. And they looked at these boys as like, oh no, they couldn't possibly have been raping you guys. And you guys never told anybody. Like, I don't believe you. You just killed them for the money. Life in jail. I ask you, audience, what is worse? Going to jail for the rest of your life for killing your parents who were raping you, or getting raped repeatedly by your parents? We gonna take a break while y'all pawn that over here on TR Tuesdays. Trophies on my wall, rather trophies on my mantle. Dog, my shows be off the handle. Take the proceeds, go to gamble. Ha, bet it on black and pray I quadruple my salary. If I win, maybe then I could pay Sally Mae. Told her I'd be dealing with some real life shit. She be asking when, bitch, when I feel like it. Cold world, cold life, cold blooded. I be on my ship and look at all the hoes. Love it, got 150 bitches in the club staring at me. How that feel? All right, we are back. Cold world. It is a cold motherfucking world, y'all. All right, we back with TR Tuesday. So we're going to finish the rest of this episode off with the prison system and my experience with the prison system. And of course, our affirmations and how you guys can support Tiara. Okay, so let's talk about why was the prison system designed, right? Well, the prison system, quote unquote, was designed to correct or to rehabilitate incorrect behavior. Before the prison system, people were just getting the death penalty, getting hung, which is death, you know. So the prison system took place of that, right? However, we know the prison system is not rehabilitating these men and these women. They are literally boring animals. Literally. And there is no justice in our quote-unquote justice system. So I'm going to talk about the Attica Riot and the Stanford Prison Experiment, both of which were made into movies. And that's how I became privy of these two events. And of course, the academic in me, I'm like, I must know more. And so I actually did a paper, two different papers on the Attica Riot, a bibliography and a movie review for two different classes some years back in undergrad. And I have not done any papers on the Stanford Prison Experiment, but I have done a lot of research just based on this movie that I seen about it, and it was just so disturbing. So I want to share this information with you. So first we're going to talk about the Attica Riot. So the Attica Riot, like I said, it took place in 1971 in New York. It is actually classified as the bloodiest riot in prison history. The riot occurred because for years, these prisoners were subject to inhumane and unsanitary conditions, such as only being able to take a shower once a week. And later I'm going to tell you more about this from my personal experience, because this is no exaggeration. A bucket of hot water to wash themselves on the other days. They literally, when your jail, your prison, it has a toilet in there, right? These fucking guards would let these toilets overflow. They wouldn't clean them. So prisoners are literally being forced to smell their own shit. You know, it's shit water on the floor, like, you know, like right by where they're laying. I mean, it's just fucking ridiculous. It's disgusting. Inadequate food. They're not being paid well to do all this labor. There's no books in the library. The fuck is the library for if there's no fucking books in it? So the pursuit for reform, it was unconventional, right? But I mean, these prisoners, their pleas, they were going ignored. So shit, enough was enough. Action had to happen, because it's like, if you don't hear me, I'm gonna make you hear me, right? I mean, I'm just saying, that's how they probably was feeling. The Attica Riot was pivotal to the structure and rights of the prisoners. It is unfortunate that it took such a gruesome upheaval to make this reform. I mean, the end result of the riot was 29 prisoners dead, 10 officers dead. And let me just tell you that during the time of this event, Rockefeller was the governor, and this riot lasted for 4 days. And, you know, like the first day of, you know, like a kidnapping, a riot, something like this, you know, they send over a negotiator, like, you know, to try to like negotiate some terms and conditions. And the prisoners gave them a list. And it was just, it was reasonable things, you know, like they wanted adequate food, like I said. They wanted their letters to actually be mailed to their family, they wanted some substantial books that they could read in the library, not books where the pages are all ripped and torn apart. I mean, they wanted adequate pay. I mean, come on now, we can't get a plunger in the sale. Like, I mean, we're not asking for too much here. Rockefeller did not take this shit seriously and let this shit go on for 4 fucking days. Ultimately, of course, they sent in the damn National Guard and they tear gas the shit because it was out. They had this outside in one of the yards or whatever. So they tear gas, you know, so some officers died in this and they just put this shit all on the prisoners. Like those 10 officers that died, how much you want to bet it's officers killing their own people in this event here? Because tear gas, it's all, you don't know who is who. And then they just start shooting wildly. I mean, and that was the result. More fatalities than it needed to be. As far as the reforms which needed to be in place, because of this riot, nothing was really changed, especially within the Attica prison. In fact, conditions became harsh and like more worse after the riot. A lot of the prisoners that were, like, you know, involved in the riot, and some of them, not all the prisoners in the whole prison were involved, I mean, you know, or like leaders or had any say in the shit. Yet even still, they refused to give these people proper medical attention, hoping that they would just die out, like, you know, or get an infection from being stabbed or shot or what have you. Because, yeah, while, I mean, the prisoners were mainly focused on reform, of course they was getting even and beating the shit out of these guards that just have just been, you know, like, treated them like they are not even human beings, you know, like they're less than a dog. So, of course. And then you also have prisoners attacking prisoners, you know, because you got gangs in prison, prisoners raping other prisoners. Like, it was a lot of shit going on, you know, in this riot. So I feel like the biggest question that remains is, how can we change the prison system from outside the prison system, right? Because we're not in the prison system, of course, right? We're outside of it. But how can we change it? Because this is not cool. It's not cool at all. All right, we're going to take another break and we'll be back after this. All right, welcome back. I hope you guys are enjoying this episode. We got lots more to talk about. So we're going to finish with some more things here. We're going to talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment right now, my own experience with jail, and where you can find and support me. And of course, we're going to end with positivity, these affirmations. All right, so the Stanford Prison Experiment was also conducted in 1971. That seems like that was a really pivotal year, like a turning point within the prison system, or at least it tried to be. All right, so the experiment, of course, took place at Stanford, and it was only eligible for Stanford students. Zimbardo was the lead psychologist, and he's also a professor still at Stanford. I don't even know how. But he's the lead psychologist on this experiment, and he put an ad in the newspaper. 1971, people, this is how we found out everything back then, is the newspaper. He put an ad in the newspaper that he was conducting an experiment on the prison system and human behavior. 75 different people responded to this experiment. He also put that he was going to pay $15 a day, and the experiment was supposed to last 6 weeks, which I'm going to reiterate a little bit in a minute. And it just is, it's so baffling and troubling at the same time that for $15 a day, that a person would sign away their rights and consent to an experiment that is literally based on the prison system. Like, it's so cheap how, like, you could just, it's crazy how it's not so cheap. It's crazy how cheap people will sell themselves for just $15 a day. It's crazy that people will literally get paid $15 a day just to be a part of something, because that's our society. Everybody just wants to be a part of something. Like, remember, this is a psychological experiment, and I'm about to get a degree in psychology, so I'm really interested in shit like this, because it's just like, human behavior, it is very interesting. Anywho, out of the 75 people that responded, Zimbardi and his team, they chose 24 students, 12 guards, 9 main guards, but 3 like would rotate them out, or like if something went wrong, the same with the prisoners. He chose 12 prisoners, 3 of which to rotate in and out. So it's important to note that none of these students, because they were asked this in the interview, none of these students had any psychological disorders like ADHD or anxiety, like, you know, so they said though, right? None of them had criminal arrest or activity, you know, none of them had any medical conditions like high blood pressure, you know, or anything like that. So they all seemed to be healthy and well-minded. Like I said, they made this into a movie, which is how I found out about it. And then I did my own research and watched a lot of YouTube interviews because, like I said, this is fascinating. During the experiment, I noticed a power trip from the guards over the prisoners. It was like the guards forgot that they was really college students and that these were other college students, their colleagues, really, right? And they became more aggressive and more violent than they would normally be in a real life. I mean, one guy even faked an accent. Like, he had a fake accent, like, just took on this whole Texan persona. Like, it was so strange. And he wore a taped-on bearded mustache. Like, you know, just shit like that. They, like, literally forgot, like I said, who they were. Like, y'all are some students. Like, calm down. The guards, they played on the prisoners' fear, and they would break into their cells, strip the prisoners naked. They would take their beds from them and make them sleep on the floor without a blanket or a cover. Like, just, they would put them in solitary confinement, like, if they would, like, object. And all of this went against the rules and regulations of said experiment. And mind you, Zimbardo and his team were watching this like 24/7. They were rotating psychologists because they had cameras in there, you know, because this is an experiment. So they want to see. And he's like, no, Zimbardo's like, no, let it play out. Like, I want to see, like, you know, what's going to happen. Like, nobody is supposed to be getting abused, touched, violated in fear of their life. But I mean, this was this experiment. It took less than 6 days for these guards to become sadistic. And the prisoners took this as true, like, you know, was like really scared for their life. Like I said, this experiment was supposed to last 2 weeks. But after 3 days, one of the prisoners left. Like, he just, you know, made a whole spectacle, like put on a whole scene, like, I lied, like, I have anxiety and depression, like, I can't do this, like, stop eating So they let him go, but they was like, they not going to let nobody else go. And then on day four, they let another prisoner go. So they was, you know, these prisoners was dropping like flies. So this experiment, which was supposed to last for 2 weeks, lasted only for 6 days because you got prisoners having emotional breakdowns, meltdowns, and you got these guards getting worse and worse with this excessive violence, aggression. Like, you know, it was very troubling to watch, to say the least. And it just shows a lot about human behavior. So according to Zimbardo, because I was interested, like, what was his intention? What was the conclusion? Like, what did he want to conclude? So Zimbardo, he concluded from the experiment that the experiment revealed how people will readily conform to the social roles they are expected to play, especially if the roles are as strongly stereotyped as those of prison guards. Zimbardo, he couldn't have been more unethical for me. And like, I can't even believe he wasn't sued, because I was like, nobody tried to sue him. But I mean, you know, it was 1971, number one. These prisoners, yeah, they did consent and sign away their rights, but like, they also consented to not being abused. Like, they like, you know, Zimbardo said, like, oh, you know, nobody's going to get hurt or hit or anything like that. And that definitely wasn't the case. So I feel like, you know, obviously it's too late now, but I couldn't believe this man wasn't sued. And I don't even know how he is still accredited today and at Stanford teaching still, to no less. It's crazy. I could have said more about the Attica riot too, like I said, because I done 2 papers on it. Just the Stanford prison experiment, it's just like more in my head because I like just, you know, like I said, became privy to this. And the reason why I want to talk about both of them is because I feel like if you look at them on their face, the Attica riot and the Stanford prison experiment, they both show how the leading forces and the destruction that happens within these prison walls seem like they lie heavily on these prison guards. When you have malice guards, right, who have the ability to destroy your life and it's already destroyed, like these prisoners, they're already confined to this box in this 4x4. I mean, they got the damn toilet in their room, you know? So when you have guards who, like, I mean, you know, maybe they father abused them, like, or, you know, they abuse their wife at home or their wife abuses them. Like, you really don't know, but for some reason they come to work and they take on this persona, this role. And I don't know, like, if you have to be quote unquote, like, hard to be a prisoner. Like, I mean, not a prisoner, I'm sorry. It seems like you gotta be hard to be a prisoner or you ain't gonna make it in there. But I'm sorry, I don't know if you have to be hard to be a guard, I'm saying. Like, are they gonna look at you as weak, the prisoners, your other, you know, associates, if you have some sort of compassion? Like, why is there a need to treat these prisoners like they are less than? Some of them are in prison for not paying child support. We're going to get into some facts and statistics here in a minute, but I don't know. That's my question for you. So we're going to take a quick little break, and then I'm going to come back with some facts and statistics, actually, that I learned. And then we're going to get into my own prison experience here, or jail experience, rather, in a bit. So let's get into some facts and some statistics. So did y'all know that the United States has the highest incarceration rate and largest prison population in the world? There's a lot of fucking prisons and a lot of people filling up these fucking prisons. I'm wondering with that statistic, like, why are these prisons so overpopulated? So, of course, I get on Google and do my research. According to the United States Department of Justice, there has been an increase of people fearing criminal activity altogether. In order to comfort our overly privileged Americans, politicians, judges, parole boards are enforcing stricter laws, which is leaving the United States prison system overcrowded. So basically, we got some scary ass motherfuckers in this world. And so to appease them, we put in people in prison for not paying child support, petty theft, excessive tickets, minor offenses, basically, that deserve slaps on the wrist. But we filling up the prisons with these kind of people. And then you got these guards treating these people like they are fucking murderers. It doesn't make any sense. So did y'all know minorities are no longer the majority in prisons? According to the Bureau of Prisons, as of October 29th, 2022, Caucasians account for 57.6% of prisons in the United States. Yet even still, minorities are targeted by police at a faster rate. And it's these Caucasians that are up in here doing all these crimes. I feel like what's really key here, and I'm going to leave y'all with this and then get into my own, is that when people go to prison and they get a felony, it is hard for them to get a job when they get out, right? So, and these, we talk about menial jobs, Taco Bell, McDonald's, let alone if they actually want to be something and work as a stockbroker. When you have a felony, that makes it that much harder for you to get a job when you get out of jail. Then add you're black. So these people are forced then to go back to, like, if they were selling drugs or, you know, scamming, whatever they were doing, they're forced to go back to that because when they tried to do the straight arrow, they couldn't find a job. All right, everybody wants to know, y'all nosy as fuck. I know, y'all nosy. Everybody wants to know, oh my God, Chiara, how the fuck did you go to jail? Girl, let me tell you something my mama told me but never explained. My mama always told me, be careful who you have a baby by. But she never told me, like, what that meant, right? With that said, her not telling me what that meant ill-prepared me for what is my life now. So, after further review, I'm actually not going to tell you guys about my first experience that I just recently had in jail for a variety of reasons. Number one, the fuckery is still going on, so I can't tell my right hand what my left hand is doing. Number two, it wouldn't be legally smart to tell my right hand what my left hand is doing. But what I will say is, stay tuned because book one is coming quick. It's coming quick, like Drake said. Then you got book two, three, and then book four will be here before you know it. And I'm going to tell you all about it in book four. You just got to stick with me. Stay being my fan. Stay listening. Stay sharing. Stay putting me out there on a bigger platform. I will say, though, there's obviously a difference between male prisons that I just described and the female prison, or I keep saying prison because I'm talking about prisons, but the female jail that I went to and experienced. There's obviously a huge cultural barrier across ethnicities. So, of course, a Caucasian person is treated much differently than I am, especially if I am in a population where there are no niggas that look like me, like where I'm literally in a town where people are staring at me like I'm Picasso hanging on the walls, like they ain't never seen something so magnificent. I'm telling you, then trickle in the rest of the family. They looking at us like, oh my God, But y'all just need to be nice because you just never know what people are going through. So I'm sorry I tricked you guys. It really wasn't intentional. I put it in there and then I reviewed it and I was like, no. So don't be mad at me, but it's coming. Book 4, multiple chapters on it. First chapter is called The Mugshot. Just a little spoiler. So do wait for me. All right. You already know. Vote 5 stars for your girl on Spotify. Please rate me. I haven't got a review in forever on Apple Podcasts either. All you got to do is type in Tiara L. Christopher or Tiara Tuesdays on Apple Podcasts and rate your girl 5 stars. Leave me a review. Answer some of these questions. I'm actually going to try and implement this new feature here where I can put in Q&A. So you know how I already asked you that, but apparently I can like attach them to my segment and you guys can like respond that way. And that may be an easier way for you guys to respond. And it may be a way for me to get more responses. So we're going to try that out. We'll see if it works. Of course, we have to end with some positivity. But first, a beautiful quote by my favorite. I'm sure you heard this quote many, many times before, but it just rings true. And I recently bought this, as a quote, like, you know, I got it blown up or whatever. So, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them the first time. Dr. Maya Angelou. I'll be telling you that quote again and again and again. It's my favorite quote of all. Today's affirmations are centered around peace, simply calming the mind, being in that moment, breathing in that moment, taking in that moment. Repeat these affirmations after me in your head or write them down for a peaceful day on this lovely Tuesday. I am at peace. I am so calm. I am in control of my emotions. I am quieting my mind. I am centering my body. I am taking in this moment of peace. I am peaceful. I am tranquil. I am in tune with tranquility. I am present. I love my life and I am so thankful for this time to myself. I need this time for myself. I am blessed. I am grateful. I am thankful. I thank you for peace.